Without a doubt, we are living in interesting times. It feels like we're at the edge of paradigm shift. Paradigm shift, what does that mean? Well, when we remember when I wasn't there, or they discovered the universe wasn't flat, it was round. I don't know when they discovered that, but they discovered that, didn't they? They woke up and someone said, it's not flat, it's round. So that would be an example of a paradigm shift, where what people believed or thought was true collapsed. I don't know how they got the word out then, or in fact whether it affected anything. So in a way, what we're going through is a lot more dramatic. Where things that we believed were reliable, people that we thought knew what they were doing, experts themselves are now confessing in shock belief or shock disbelief, admitting that maybe their thinking was flawed. So we have an entire ideology bankrupt, both literally and metaphorically. And we see its you see the net of Indra, that great interconnectedness with everything, which is so magisterially and dramatically being illustrated in how, with the news, how it, this cascading effect on every other aspect of the universe. So it's like business cannot carry on as usual. Someone has pushed the pause button. Or worse, because it's like it's hard to know. We don't know what's going to happen, where we're going to go from here. And we'd like to know. We put a lot of store in knowing. But we don't. And in a way, what's happening, it kind of makes me think of the same tactics are used in Zen masters. You know, these wallops on the head, these yells and shouts, this pulling the rug from under students. So that they're left stunned with nowhere to stand. Showing us that this posture of not knowing is a very privileged one. That it's actually life-giving. In the annals, of course, when we see these exchanges between the master and the student that seem so brutal, they were referred to as grandmotherly kindness, weren't they? Acts of compassion. I'm thinking of like the one where Tokusan goes to see the teacher Ryutan to sit and talk to him about the various sutras. It's getting late. Ryutan says to him, "All right, I think it's time you should retire. It's getting late. I'll show you out." Tokusan bows, he lifts the screen to go out, and he turns back and he says, "It's dark out here." His teacher lights a candle, hands it to him, and just as Tokusan steps out into the dark, the teacher standing in pitch dark. So why would he do such a thing? Kind of rude. Well, you know, Tokusan was this guy who was very knowledgeable. He was a scholar. He put a lot of faith in knowing. He was an expert in analyzing the sutras, and actually had come to this part of China to address this new sect that had grown up, the Zen sect, which did not believe in words and letters, but believed in this direct seeing. Tokusan was not very pleased about this. So he traveled down with his sutras, all of his essays and papers on his back in a bundle. And along the way, he stops at this woman who's serving tea and cakes. She says, "What's in the bundle?" He said, "Sutras." And she says, "Oh, doesn't it say in the Lotus Sutra, future mind no substance. Past mind, no substance, no reality. So with what mind will you take my tea cake? He was flustered. He couldn't answer. I mean, anybody here would know, wouldn't they? How you answer that. So embarrassed, he said, well, is there someone I can study with around here? So she directed him to Ryutan. And Ryutan saw what he was dealing with. This guy's very attached to his ideas. And he saw the moment to cut him off at the pass. And to show him, to bring him directly face to face with experience unmediated by his conceptual filters. So you imagine you're standing in the pitch dark. Can't use his GPS navigational, his usual ways of ordering his world. Pitch dark. Which way is forward, which way is back. All he's aware of is probably this beating heart and this vast, vast awareness. I once asked Joe Kubek whether a teacher was necessary. And she said, well, can you learn from life? Like, how would you feel if you lost your leg? Well, so it happened that I'd lost a tooth that month and was not very happy about it. Created a big stink. In fact, I sacked my dentist. So, can you learn from life? Can we allow that whatever happens is our teacher? And to face that without, you see, the tools that we resort to, blame, shoulda, coulda, woulda, our usual ways of trying to fix things, solve things, figure them out. In a way, to be just completely open to our experience, it makes us very vulnerable, doesn't it? The vulnerability that we hoped we could grow out of when we were children, when we were infants. It's like, I don't want to be here, and I can't wait to grow up so I can make my own decisions and not have to be helpless again. And so we think the mind is a wonderful tool to help achieve some manner and measure of control. Thank you. And so it is. It's a marvelous tool. But it has its definite limits and its traps. Just think of a colony of ants, how extraordinarily sophisticated they are. In their organizational capacities, their functioning, however they run things or get things done, but there's clearly some form of intelligence. At work. Yet, you're not going to approach your average ant and ask them to perform some calculus problem or to do brain surgery. We don't know the limits. We don't know the extent to which our mind actually robs us of our full contact with our life. How our mind can shut down the doors of perception, can narrow our focus so that we're actually excluding our very experience. And how we settle over and over again for a conceptual take on things rather than the actual richness of our sensory moment-to-moment experience. I mean, just look at like the elections. It's so instructive. Because we see the same mechanisms how the media how it can seize on, you know, certain facts, quote them out of context. It can make ads to highlight something about a candidate in order to influence constituencies in one way or the other. And this idea of, you know, the robocalls, how do they go? You know, this kind of sinister, intimate voice that tells us something about a candidate. Do you know that blah 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 has da 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 da? And we think, how shocking. But actually, just think of like somebody who's recently had the misfortune of offending you, crossing your path, doing something you didn't like. And instantly there's a smear campaign going on, isn't there, in our mind. Unreliable. Incompetent. You know, where we reduce this person to just this one characteristic. Where we send ourselves these robocalls. About this person. So I'm no longer open to the mysterious unfolding. Something happened, and now I've frozen. They did something, they said something, and I've frozen that behavior, and I've attached a they are, he is, da-da-da-da, she is, da-da-da-da, until the end of time. So I've converted something that is a dynamic, unfolding aliveness that's constantly changing. I've made it static, clunky, and I've put it over there, and I'm not going to have anything to do with them, I'm going to avoid them. This is how I control my universe, so I'm not, well, that I'm not going to have to be open to maybe being proven wrong. Or maybe seeing that this person that I've now tainted and tarred with a general brush, because they did this, they can do no right in my book. So I'm not able to be open to see, oh, they did that, but there are all of these other amazing qualities. I'd rather go by this inner map of my own construction of who's who and what's what, dividing and divvying out the world, this is safe, this is unsafe, than meet fresh moments that are coming up, fresh universe in every nanosecond. The universe has made, I don't know how many revolutions, but it has brought whole new universe into being. But I'll stay with my inner map, thank you, to navigate. Giryu actually wrote a piece in the electronic newsletter, this issue, called The Body Politic, where he went canvassing in Philadelphia and met, you know, door to door, I guess, some McCain supporters. And it was beautiful because he talked about that, just the very difference of actually speaking to a human being who identified as Republican and you know, their reasons for why they thought it was the best thing. Or they were undecided. They weren't sure who to vote for. But his point was that it's very different than listening to the pundits on TV, to actually go and have this face-to-face conversation. And for a lot of us, our idea of finding out what's happening in the world is to go to the TV, the newspaper, to use the media as a source of information. Well, there's information, and then there's learned ignorance, and then there's experience, and then there's an openness to this experience without necessarily rushing into label. To be in this place of unknowing. And how do we even practice that with ourselves? You know, we have ideas, or we ask, well, who am I? What am I like? And yet the person that is asking that question, the I that is asking that, is not the same that's being asked about. Because the I that's being asked about, who am I, that I is the object of the subject I, who am I, is being objectified. When I reflect on myself, I'm treating myself as an object. So I can talk about maybe the self I was 5 minutes ago, but I cannot talk about the self that I am. I can only be her. We can be here and see, what is it like? For us to be here. And how do we do that? How do we inquire into what it's like to be here? You see, we can open into that question. And when we open into it, we see that hopefully our bodies are involved. It's not just this that our bodies are the gateway. What is the experience? But the more we go into it, you see, we see that it keeps opening up, doesn't it? And the only way we can open up to it is with this sense of innocence. So what is here? Remember, unless you become as little children. Children don't have the answers. A master was asked the question, what's the way? Master said, it's right before your eyes. The monk says, but why do I not see it for myself? Master says, because you are thinking of yourself. He says, but what about you? Do you see it? Master says, as long as you see double, saying I don't and you don't, and so on, your eyes are clouded. Monk says, well, when there's neither I nor you, can you see it then? Master said, well, when there's neither I nor you, who is the one that wants to see it? And the monk said sadly, I can't follow you. I can't understand you. Master said, I can't understand myself. You see, we so desperately want to understand, but understanding in the way we wanted, isn't it, is to, okay, I got it. I got it squared. Now I know. Or I'm somewhere where I think I can finally finally relax, be at ease. But it's the question of who is it that wants to be at ease? What is it that wants to be at ease? And paradoxically, it's the one who wants to be at ease I was going to say who causes all the problems, but that's not fair. It has ideas. It has ideas about what is required. To be at ease. You see? So it has ideas that to be at ease is sort of like this nice pad that's all comfy and cozy and warm and safe with a good salary and good food and I get to do anything I want. Ultimately, what it comes down to, isn't it, is trust. Trust that even if the world is going to hell in a handbasket, that it's perfectly okay. That it's more than okay. That it's just what's needed. That it's the grandmotherly kindness. That may not feel good, and that may leave us gasping, What did you say about freedom? Freedom is nothing left to lose. So we see it in the interests of our ultimate freedom. That's what's at stake. Our ultimate freedom. And we don't know what that looks like. Sentence.